Today marks our final installment in season one. But don't worry, we're returning January 3rd with a brand new trial, which I'll introduce at the end of this episode. Today we're picking up in the midst of a jury reunion with the all-star team of improvisers who determine the guilt of Samantha Hall. Macklin, you had some great lines. I was just thinking about you and Carl facing off, mm-hmm. Sam facing off, and there's one point when Sam raised a subject and he said, I mean, that doesn't really have to do with this. And you went, well, then why did you bring it up? I felt that, and I remember it wasn't like a joke, but it made me laugh out loud when I heard it.
Yeah. I think we all had moments like that.
I feel like Macklin's character was like at the beginning. You know, the foreman was really trying to like keep the peace and mm-hmm. actively listen to everyone's viewpoint. And you know, okay, Carl, you're a part of this jury. We're gonna listen to you. But as the case went on, I feel like he had just less and less tolerance for Carl. Yeah. Finally, was just like shut it down.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I mean, like that's like when I say the character is very close to me. I mean, that's part of it. It's like I'm a very diplomatic person, sometimes mm-hmm. to a fault. Mm-hmm. I care too much about everyone feeling heard. I care too much about everyone
getting along
and all those stupid hippy-dippy feelings. But there came a time, probably like episode like 3 or 4 where I realized, well, I also like have opinions and I can't just play this like middle ground the whole time. I'm going to have to vote eventually one way or another. And that was a fun mask to start to peel off. And
yeah, it was like an evolution of Mason that I think we witnessed.
Carl did not like the second version. He liked the first version much better.
Yeah.
It was frustrating because even as, you know, you sort of moved from being mediator to more directly expressing which viewpoint you held, you were still frustratingly in the middle of stuff constantly. So it's like, well, I kind of see that, but I could see this. And it was just, I remember it grating on me and thinking like, just pick a side so I know what to do. Like, so I know how to handle you, because when you're stuck in the middle, mm-hmm. I don't know which side you're on. And if you're leaning on my side, I can move on to one of the other ones that I got to work on. But if you're not, then I have to go at you. And being stuck, it was frustrating because I didn't really know if you were hiding how you felt and you just didn't want to come out with it. Because again, it comes back to strategy for Carl. I didn't know if you were hiding how you really felt and that was a strategy,
right.
Or if you really didn't know which side you were on and if you were winnable or not. And it was really frustrating not knowing and being able to figure out what your deal was.
Yeah, you were really hard to read those first couple episodes.
Yeah.
God, Sam, that really speaks to your calculation, like you were saying before. Like you really did approach with a strategy.
Yes, for every person. And in the middle of conversations, I would kind of back out of it and think like, all right, what do I have to do here? Maybe if I piss her off, that'll be good because it'll get her on my side more.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like all that, all that's going on, because again, the most important thing to Carl was being right and winning. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of what he did comes back to deliberate moves or trying to like politically and strategically figure out what are people's motives, where do they lie, what can I use to get them on my side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Nice. Well, nice job. That rings true for me because I remember you were like the most diligent note taker.
Yeah.
I remember you just, you know, you'd hear like a weakness and a witness's testimony and I'd see you just like jot it down. Like you were all over it.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time for me, I remember feeling conflict myself because I really wanted everything to be kind of like an even debate throughout.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that in the beginning of the season, and for the record, we recorded this over 2 days. To like 6 to 8 hour days, I don't remember exactly, but in the beginning of recording, I thought everyone would sort of be more in the pro innocent camp because they hadn't really heard all of the evidence yet. Even though I'd given everyone character profiles, was sort of like, you're leaning this way, you're leaning that way, and I feel like it was just after day one, I was panicked because it was like she looks guilty. It looks like they're gonna vote her guilty first degree, and like, and Sam was kind of like running the show, and I was scared that there was not gonna be enough of a debate to like. Yeah. So I added a quick segment like for this next day of recording. I added like a bit which was a text exchange in which It was the one where Sam said, you know, or Troy said, I'll never take it too far. I'll never let it go too far.
Oh, you added that?
I added that out of panic mode.
I remember you saying that.
I remember you.
Yeah. And I wanted that to like tilt things back towards, you know, towards innocence. And my, you know, my fear the whole time was like, I just wanted this to be like really on the fence. Mm-hmm. And it kept leaning guilty because Sam was so fucking good at making points and like taking out like foe by foe by foe. Uh-huh. And he was like kind of dominating the table a lot of times. And I was like, God damn it. Like, do I need to like plant more evidence in or, honestly, the way that it turned out was great. Just from a production standpoint, I remember Macklin saying, the day of, I voiced, I'm kind of worried that it's getting like too guilt heavy and you're like, or that something along those lines. I remember Macklin saying, like, well, it's good, like, to sort of give the, you know, mm-hmm. eventually you're going to have an audience, and that audience is going to want to, like, I think you're making the point, dislike Carl, you know what I mean? Like, have, you know, they're going to want to have allegiances with some characters and not mm-hmm. with others. And so right. if something's leaning in one way, it just gives the audience something to feel more impassioned about. Mm-hmm. And you were exactly right, because the audience did feel very, like, it seemed like the more the conversations tilted towards guilt, the mm-hmm. more the audience was enraged more engaged and more invested in the outcome. So, I don't know.
I heard Michaela, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I heard her saying that she had trouble listening to it, like detaching herself from the character, that her fate, her personal fate, was in the balance.
Yeah. Mm. Wow.
And you're asking about how we feel about the discussion in the Facebook group. And I got to say, I was more sensitive to it than I expected to be, mm-hmm. even though it's just, we're just playing characters and this is all fictional. Every time the jurors as a whole got criticized, I can't believe these jurors are doing this. It was like,
personal.
I constantly wanted to comment, like, well, actually, we did our best.
Yeah.
I was very protective of us.
I get it. I was defensive too, you know? And after I wrote this story, when I was listening to all of you in this room, you kept bringing up points that I never considered and mm-hmm. like, and outlooks I never considered and like, this is so much that had just completely escaped me. And then I went through that same process over again when an audience was listening to it and they were raising points that I hadn't considered and mm-hmm. viewpoints
yeah.
that were new and fresh to me. And so, like, it would be impossible, I think, for anyone to sit in a room and hear a controversial case and be able to think of everything that they should say and address.
Oh my God, yeah.
No way.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
you guys had really hard jobs.
Well, I keep thinking, like, we did this, like you said, for, like, 6-8 hours over 2 days. And, you know, you think, like, well, in some of these high-profile cases, the jurors are meeting for 8 hours a day for 3 weeks. And
yeah,
I'm just like, oh my gosh.
It's exhausting. Yeah. That sounds exhausting.
Yeah. yeah. Just coming back in and being like, God damn it, I got to see Carl again. What's going to change this time?
Yeah.
Like, I can't imagine doing it for 3 weeks or, you know.
Yeah, because even listening to that last episode where we're saying, like, what would you have to hear to vote a certain way? As I'm listening, I'm thinking, there's nothing else to hear. We've heard that. We've been through everything, and we can't introduce new evidence into the deliberations.
I think someone brought it up that like, you don't want to end in mistrial because, like, or you don't want.
I think it was you that said.
It's like you then it passes to someone else, and then you lose whatever say you might have.
Yeah.
Well, you made that. Like, you made that argument to get Carl on our side because all of us were for manslaughter and he wasn't.
Yeah.
And Mandy was like, if this gives a mistrial, it goes to another jury and they might acquit her.
Yeah.
And
actually,
that kind of helps sway your opinion.
Yeah, and I will say that I think I wanted, obviously, guilty on everything. And that was my goal. But realistically, I thought, let me get the most I can get.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I'm going to have to give on something. I don't want to. I'm going to try and get guilty on everything because I think that she should be guilty, but I think I knew I was going to have to sacrifice on something. So part of me wanted to make sure that everyone felt like, okay, this is the most we can get out of him, and I didn't want it to feel at all like he was willing to compromise any more than that or compromise at all.
Oh man!
But there was also, when you said that, even already knowing, like, it was going to be really hard, and especially at the end there, it was going to be impossible to get full guilty on everything.
Right.
But when you said that, that did trigger a thought where I remember thinking, shit, that's true. So it could be another jury, and she could totally get off. And mm-hmm. I just could not sit with the thought of that. I could not sit with, I'm going to be driving home from this courtroom and realize that if she goes to trial again, she could completely get off. Right. And that's just not right.
And that's
right.
on you.
That's on me.
Yeah, exactly.
And that really sat with me deeply. Mm-hmm. And so if there was any part of me that said, no, hold out for a little bit longer and see if you can get this going the other way, I think that really was effective because it really made me think, no, you have to get her on something here. Like mm-hmm. she has to go to jail. She did this. She's responsible. She needs to be punished. And I want to get the strongest punishment I can. So if this is the best I'm going to get, then I just have to recognize that. And I can't take a risk that she's going to get off next time.
I'm really happy to talk to you about my favorite new app. It's called Texture. And it's completely changed the way I think about, read, and appreciate magazines. As soon as I got Texture, I got unlimited access to over 200 premium magazines with leading titles like Time, The Atlantic, The New Yorker, Vanity Fair, and Wired. But not only did I get these magazines, I got access to all their back issues. And my favorite feature, it's searchable. Meaning I can search for topics and articles and mark what I like. Plus, they curate and recommend content for me every day, so I've been discovering a lot of stuff I'm hugely interested in and never would have come across. It's awesome. The Texture app has become part of my daily ritual. I start my day with magazine reading, and I go to bed with magazine reading. So, and I'm not trying to make a lit joke, but the Texture app is essentially bookending my days, and I love it. Plus, it's super easy to hide my guilty pleasure magazines, and I can continue striving toward minimalism by cutting back on all the print magazine clutter. I love, love, love this app. Just imagine having your favorite magazines and their back issues anytime, anywhere. To start your Texture free trial, go to texture.com/deliberations. If you choose to continue, podcast listeners will get Texture for just $9.99 a month. That's over 30% off their listed price. There are also great gift options available for the holiday season. So go to texture.com/deliberations to start your free trial today. That's texture.com/deliberations. texture.com/deliberations.
It was so exciting to do this whole experience.
Oh
I mean,
gosh,
like, because I don't know if the audience knows how we didn't hear every argument. And, like, you know, all at once. We didn't have everything. We heard it in sections, and we deliberated, mm-hmm. and then we'd hear a section and deliberate. And then not knowing exactly what everyone's going to say. Like, as an improviser working with a whole group of wonderful improvisers and not knowing where it's going to go, it was so exciting. Like,
yeah.
I mm-hmm. could have stayed in here for 10 hours easily.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be exhausting if it were a real jury because there is a person's life on the line. But it mm-hmm. was so exciting because up until the end, it's like, I mean, Chelsea hadn't told us that we had to have an actual, like, we could have.
Oh, yeah. When she said that she hadn't written a verdict, we were just like, oh my God, wait, what?
I remember we asked you and you said, I don't know.
Yeah.
And we all looked at each other and she doesn't know.
We're going to deliberate.
It's like, oh, crap,
but
it's
like,
on
us. We could have just, like, come to no common ground, no conclusion. Mm-hmm. Like, what if that had happened? Like, we didn't know.
I don't think any of us wanted
that,
though.
No.
I don't think any of us wanted
that. You get
that
passion. You get, like, totally wrapped up in it. But I remember us all, like, at the end, just staring at Sam, Carl, deciding, you know, like, what's it gonna be? And we were all, and he, like you said, he was at the end of a table. And so we were just like, what's it
going to
be?
Yeah.
We're all staring at him. Oh, my God. So exciting.
Yeah, I remember one of you asking me at some point, are we allowed to hang? And I think I said, you can try.
Right.
I have a feeling I know what the what the fictional judge will tell you to do.
I'll write something for that fictional judge to tell you.
If any of the listeners want a picture of the table, so imagine a clock and imagine a Carl at the 12 o'clock. And then you go clockwise, and then it was Janet was the next one, and then it was Steph, and then mm-hmm. it was Mason, and then it was Mandy, and then Dominic.
Yeah.
If that helps you.
Which worked out great, because if we were too close together, that would have been
hard. That would have
really amped up how heated in person, and already did.
Yeah.
But I think the fact that we had a buffer between the two of us, who was more on the, you know, you had strong opinions, but more gentle about things and a little bit less direct.
Right.
So I think if we were actually physically sitting next to each other, it would have got way more personal and way more off the rails. Yeah. So I think the way that it was
Did you assign ourselves? You did.
I had more of the pro guilt people on one end and more of the pro innocent on the other. But, you know, really, it was just the two hardliners in the beginning. It was Carl and Mandy. I kind of, thinking back, it was kind of a dick move, because I think I just stereotyped. I was like, bleeding hard, born again, go. And but you guys really humanized it. But you really humanize the characters, and it is interesting how sort of the reaction once it was airing was almost that of like hero and villain, whereas I really didn't anticipate it to be that strong of a dichotomy there.
Right. Yeah. That was also interesting to remember that we could bring our fictional characters' backstory in a little bit into our arguments, because like I mentioned, like an ex-girlfriend and things like that, and that I almost, when I did have those realizations and would do it, I was like, okay, remember, like, you can do that more, because that just gives not only the listener, but everyone in the room a fuller picture of yourself and where you're coming from. And that was also the more effective times that Carl, when he would mention, you know, like, what he had experienced in the past, things like that. I can only imagine on a real jury, you know, how much obviously comes in the room with you that you don't say, but then what you end up sharing with these people that can be so intimate and so, I don't know, just like raw. It's so interesting.
I actually wonder if improvising as characters allowed us to be more honest than we would have if we were actually serving on a jury, if we felt that protection. And I don't know the answer to that. I might be more honest if it's a real journey and I feel the real stakes, but I don't know. There's a
certain
freedom.
But then you are bearing yourself to people.
Yeah, to strangers.
Yeah, because like I know Steph mentioned that there was a history of domestic violence in her family, and I was thinking, well, would me, Lindsay, mention that if I was on a jury? I don't know if that's something I would bring up, but you know, it was part of her backstory, and I was like, well, this seems pertinent to the conversation that we're having. Sure.
Well, and it depends on the person, I think, too, because I just recently actually served on a real jury a few months ago, and you're in a room with strangers, and what I kept getting back to with our jury was, we have to look at the facts and we have to look at the case. And I want to say, Chelsea, I think this prepped me for that experience, which is really cool, because I was there, had to be there, and I was chosen foreman, so I had to keep things going. I had to make sure everybody was fair and everybody was heard, and it just, all of everything we did here was like, oh my gosh, I was kind of like prepped for this real life experience, and it just kind of helped me get through it. And we did get a verdict.
How long did
it
take?
It took a total of 5 days, not deliberations, but total of five days.
The trial.
How did you come to be foreman? Did you volunteer?
I had been a foreman before years ago, and no one wanted to do it. So I said, okay. And I consider myself pretty even. I'm pretty.
Somebody's got to do it.
It's the first
Somebody's
got
to do it. And I'm, you know, I will listen to everything, and I'm a pretty even person with people. I like everybody. I want everybody to like me. And that's kind of how my personality is. And so I figured it fit, and it did, and it worked out. It was good.
But, yeah.
Well, thank you for your civic duty.
Yeah.
You're
welcome.
And I'm so glad we were all a part, in a way, of justice being served. If this prepared you.
Exactly.
Different personalities and different backgrounds. But getting back to the question of whether or not we would say something about our past, like an abusive relationship or something, I don't know. I didn't really feel like anyone in our jury would give too much information about their past or their personal life. But but yet their own opinions and their lives obviously matter. But again, steering everybody back to the facts and what we kept trying to do here too. But we got to look at it. I understand how you feel, Carl, but we have to look at the facts.
Right.
I'm on your team, but at the same time,
yes,
we have to look at the facts.
Yeah.
I think there's also a special, like, because it was a 6-person jury on this podcast versus a 12-person, that's so much more, like, it's a smaller group, it's closer quarters. Right. There's so many less barriers. When there's 12 personalities in a room, mm-hmm. I can imagine that's a lot.
It could be overwhelming.
Yeah. It takes you way longer for everybody to get a chance to say what they think.
Exactly.
It takes way longer to debate everything. It takes way longer to understand each other. Like with six people, we kind of got to know each other very quickly, know like what your deal is, how you feel about things.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like anybody that wanted to be heard about anything, unless Carl was talking over them.
Which happened most of the time.
Which, you know, had an opportunity to say how they felt at any given time.
Yeah.
How close were you to your character, Alice?
I would say I was kind of close at the beginning, but the more we deliberated, the more I was like, you need to open up and look at the case. That's what I was kind of telling my character. Janet, you need to open up and look at the case. And you may have views like Carl, but it doesn't mean that it necessarily pertains to the case. We have to look at this case as a whole and all the facts.
When everyone was listening to, if you listened to the show after it aired, did you find yourselves regretting things you've said, feeling frustrated, or was it more just entertaining? How much did you remember? Like, what was that experience like for all of you as performers hearing this like long series of improvised segments months after you recorded?
I'd forgotten most of what
I definitely forgot
it was fun.
Because there was almost a 6 month gap from when we recorded.
It was a long time.
And we recorded it over 2 days. So, you know, while we were released, you know, week after week, and it was a 2-3 month experience listening to the whole case, we did it over 2 days. So, yeah, I didn't remember much. And like as I said before, I regretted the child.
Parent-child.
Parent-child analogy. This thing like brought up to me is like, okay, if you're serving on a jury and you're working on a case where you're looking at a lifestyle that is so foreign from your own, how much of a responsibility does the defense have to educate that jury on that lifestyle? Yeah. And if they don't do their job, how much of a responsibility do you as the juror have to educate yourself on that? And quite frankly, I wasn't that educated on it going in.
Well, and I don't, the jury wasn't. I kept thinking after listening to Michaela's podcast,
which was very
interview yesterday, I was like, why wasn't she put on the stand? Because her her interview that you did with her was so compelling. I was like, man, the jury needed to have heard someone like her explain the lifestyle, because she just did it so eloquently and put it in a whole new light. And that was something that I don't think the defense, you know, had given the jury. And, you know, we were all playing characters that didn't understand the lifestyle, and there was nothing that was really given up to us to understand it besides, you know, hyperbole here and there.
But. So perhaps as part of their expert testimony, they could have led them down the path of not only to educate you about what this is and what happens, but get you to understand it and maybe even like sympathize or empathize with people who do it. Because that, you know, obviously Carl was not interested in any of that, but I think for other people on the jury, if there was more of that,
it would have been effective.
Perhaps
it
could have been more effective, because then you're not just trying to understand like, what is it that they do? What did they use? It's getting into the, and I think we talked about it a little bit, but why do people do this? You know, are they defective people, or is there something else? Is it something that everybody has? Like, you know, is there a part of us that we see in them? It's just we don't, like, we, you know, go home and have a beer or do something else or whatever to deal with that part of us, and they choose to do it like that. Like, there really wasn't anything like that from the experts talking about, like, emotionally why they do it and all that kind of stuff. So maybe if there was some of that, that could have helped. I don't know.
Back to, like, what we said and how we react to it listening to it later. There were a couple times where I impressed myself. Where I was like, good argument. There were a couple times where I was like, actually, because as Adam Dominic said, it was a couple months, I forgot what my answer was. Like, there was one early on where Dominic was like, well, so Mandy, if it was like, and he gave me some scenario. I think it was the first parent-child situation. You're like, if it was this, would that be, is that parent culpable? And I remember thinking like, what did I say? Oh my God, what did I say? Don't fuck it up. I'm sorry, don't F it up. And then I think that's when I was like, it's not the same. You can't use that that analogy. And I was like, good answer, Mandy. So there were a couple times where I was like impressed, a couple times where I cringed a little, where I was like, lay off a little, Sierra. Mandy, you're coming out a little strong on, you know, Carl, you know, you're inciting things. And so it was, because I had totally forgotten what we said, mm-hmm. That was exciting too. Like, I have to say, a lot of us had very good arguments. Well done, everyone. And then,
especially Carl.
With the holidays here, everyone is busy and schedules are packed and we're hungrier than ever. Between shopping and entertaining and decorating, a meal kit delivery service like HelloFresh is the greatest way to make nutritious, home-cooked meals easy. You can choose your delivery day to suit your schedule and press pause on your account for weeks at a time, if, say, you're traveling. Also, save money for shopping by using HelloFresh because their dinners come to less than $10 a meal. There's a lot of flexibility, including recipes for vegetarians with plant-based proteins, grains, and seasonal produce. And if you're feeding little mouths, you could try a kid-tested recipe made specifically for families, like the easy-peasy ravioli gratin with spinach, thyme, and Parmesan breadcrumbs. I was really impressed when HelloFresh arrived at my door. There were easy instructions, nutritional breakdowns of everything I was eating, and the cutest little apron included, by the way. For $30 off your first week of HelloFresh, visit HelloFresh.com and enter promo code DELIBERATIONS30. That's HelloFresh.com with code DELIBERATIONS30. I hope you like it as much as I do.
One of the hardest things for me, like I actually wasn't able to listen to the whole thing. I just couldn't.
And because you frustrated yourself too much.
Well, a little bit. A part of it was just frustrating to listen to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
And the
just
other
as a whole.
Yeah, I get really into stuff, and it was just frustrating to listen to. But also, I really started to get into the how much of this is Carl, how much of this is Sam, and even if, you know, his worldview and his beliefs and everything are not necessarily mine, you know, there might be part of me in some of them, but listening to it, it's hard. I kept getting caught up in how much of that was him, how much of that was me. Would I do the same thing, even if I believe different things? Like, would I use stuff from my background to manipulate people? Would it become about winning to me? Like, do I have an inherent need to win arguments in general? You know, and it got really hard for me to focus on what we were talking about because I was so stuck on that stuff.
Wow.
Yeah. And I think when you play characters like that, that aren't, you know, that aren't you, that are a different person than, you know, if someone met you and sat down and talked to you for a while, you'd be like, wow, that's not you at all. But there's still parts of you in it. And it gets hard when you're like, I don't know. And I try not to make judgments about whether I like this person or not. I don't know if I like some of the things that he did or some of the things that he said or, you know. But when you start really looking at and trying to figure out where's the line between us, is there a line? And in moments where you're like, maybe I would do that, and it's something that you don't want to admit about yourself. Like, yes, I would do that in that situation, or this is, I know someone who used the phrase emotional terrorist, where you find emotional things and you use them for manipulation stuff, and you start thinking, like, would I do that in that situation? For me, it was really hard to have to deal with all that stuff and still focus on what we were all talking about, because mm-hmm. these gaps would go, and then I'd realize, oh, it's another interview segment. I just missed the whole debate because I was so wrapped up in thinking about all of that.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
That sounds like it took you on a really introspective journey.
Yeah.
Listening to it.
Yeah. And, you know, like I said, especially from the outset, you look at a character and you're like, oh, this isn't me at all. You know, this is very different from me. And then if you really analyze it, obviously, anytime you play a character, there's parts of you in it. Right. Mm-hmm. But then when it's someone who, you know, if you played someone that does robberies or something, or, you know, someone that does a way worse crime or whatever it is, you have to find a way to identify with the character and make them a real person, and that comes from your own place of understanding and your own experiences. So just naturally you're going to inject a lot of you into that, and it's really not a comfortable thing all of the time. And so I think listening to it for me, it brought all of that up, and it was just, it was really uncomfortable.
Well, that's a, it's a really interesting thing to bring that up from the perspective of being an actor, because, you know, one thing you learn as an actor is you should never judge your character.
Right.
Because if you're going to play that character, you have to find a way to become that character. And I had a very similar experience. I was in a play a couple of years ago, and I had to play this woman who was this fundamentalist Pentecostal woman who beat her son because he was gay. And it was probably the hardest role I'd ever had to play in my life. And I was like emotional wreck afterwards. And it was kind of similar. Like, I could not watch video of myself playing this character because I couldn't do it. And because you do have to try and find humanity in these people that seem, you know, so different from who you are as a person, but in order to embody that character, you have to find a way to connect to it. And sometimes it's very difficult to try and to go and then see yourself as that role. I know when my parents came to see the play that I was in, they were just like, oh my God, Lindsay, we almost had to walk out because we just couldn't, like, because it was kind of the same thing for them. We're like, couldn't, you know, put together the you as the person and you as the actor and the character all together. And it's
And it must be even stronger when you're talking about an improvised performance because you know, you might not identify off the bat that strongly with a character, and yet you might hear your own vernacular. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, because you're arguing a point, so it's going to be your logic. It's going to be your style.
And you have
of
to
art.
Start thinking like the character to come up with those lines. It's not scripted for you, so you literally have to get in the mind of that character.
Who you're playing. You can't. You hit it right on the nail. You can't judge your character. You have to empathize with your character.
Right. And if your character's a douchebag, you have to write
embrace.
You
the
have
douche.
To. Write that douchebag. Like, you can't say, like, oh, someone wrote me a douchebag character. It's like, no, I wrote that douchebag character. I was given the character, but I wrote it. That's the improv. Like, that's the difference with improving it. It's
but
like,
I brought that.
I said that really awful thing. That was me, but it wasn't me, but that's like, I wrote that. Chelsea didn't make me do that.
Rather find what you like about the character. You could be playing. You know, I actually teach acting, and this is something I tell my students. I say, you know, even if you're playing a despicable human being, you have to find something you like about the character.
Right.
Because they don't think they're despicable.
Yeah, no one thinks they're the bad guy. Yeah.
No one thinks they're the bad guy. At least the good villains.
The takeaway from that is probably just like recognizing how much we have in common with each other, that even like unsavory characters, if we have to find their humanity and we find it in ourselves, then you take the worst person in the world and the best person in the world, and they're like probably like they're the Venn diagram of attributes is like there's a pretty big overlap.
It's just the overlap versus the how different really are we.
And it's the surface stuff that filters through like who their core being is, right?
Like Chelsea, when you wrote Carl, did you think Carl's a dick when you wrote it? Or did that come out through the, because I know we talked about we didn't expect the reaction to be that strong, but did you think, oh, this guy's going to be a total dick? Or
No.
That was a gift you brought to it all.
you were very welcome for that.
Thanks to Macklin McGlahey, Lindsay Rousseau, Sierra Marks, Adam El Sharkawi, Alice Bowden, and Sam Britton for participating in this reunion. You are all incredible. Thank you. Remember to stay subscribed so you get the bonus episode of Samantha Hall's sentencing hearing this December and the impending launch of season 2. At a period in our history, when narratives of sexual misconduct are everywhere, questions of believability, victim behavior, and due process for sex offenders has never been more relevant. After college seniors Keith and Riley have sex, their versions of the encounter vary dangerously. Keith insists it was consensual, but Riley alleges rape. Without inarguable corroborating evidence, the lead investigator employs an unusual form of lie detection known as statement analysis. Does this analysis point to a flawed investigation or a golden opportunity to answer the question, how is truth determined when it's his word against hers? In a more controversial, more relevant landscape of sexual accusation, we're asking the uncomfortable questions about consent, lies, and belief in the trial of Keith Montgomery. Thank you to everyone for listening this season. Sincerely, it has been the single most rewarding experience, and I couldn't be more grateful. I hope you'll all tune in next season, and in the meantime, have a great break.